Coming up on Chasing the Natty, we are going deep diving for some of our favorite late round values in CFF drafts currently. We'll be discussing some players who are being taken in round 20 plus who can end up way overperforming their value and becoming weekly starters for you this fall. We've got all that and more coming right after this.
Look at Jinty go! Breaks a tackle! He's 10! He's touchdown! Burton's gonna throw the deep ball, and Burton cut the defense! Touchdown, Luther Burton!
Milrow gonna run it again, got a lane, kicked in the turbo, Milrow! Goodbye! Touchdown, Bama!
This is Chasing the Natty, a college fantasy football podcast. All right, welcome in everyone. This is Jared Palmgren, host of the Chasing the Natty podcast. I hope you guys are having a wonderful ride to your work on this Monday morning. We are the College Fantasy Football Podcast on the Campus of Canton Podcast Network. You can find us on all of your podcast feeds and on YouTube every Monday morning during the off season at 6 a.m. sharp. If you want to support the great work we're doing here, head on over to campusofcanton.com and subscribe there to any of our expeditious tiers, especially the NIL tier. You'll find out why you'll want to be subscribed to that here in just a few minutes. But even still, we have content ranging on all sorts of college football games, whether it's college fantasy, Devy, Campus Canton Leagues, college IDP, college DFS. If you play it, we've got content, whether it's tools, rankings, pretty much everything you need to succeed. If you want to get in touch for whatever reason, you can find me in the show on Twitter. I'm at @CFF_Jared. The show is at Chasing the Natty, and the handsome fellow joining me today is Mr. Ethan Sowers, at Ethan Sowers on Twitter. Ethan, how you doing, man? It's been a minute.
And I'm good. I am, living the dad life here and fully gearing up for summer and more time with the little guy. So we're chugging right along, but starting to get into the thick of some supplemental drafts and just finished up rookie drafts in my Dynasty League. So excited to kind of center back in on CFF now that those things are kind of cemented away and locked in. So excited to talk some sleepers today.
Oh, absolutely. And believe you me, Ethan, I am about to take up your entire summer with the CFF guy that we are getting ready to put together to come out before 4th of July weekend. We got a lot of work to do there. It's going to be a ton of fun.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
So, yeah, but like Ethan said, we're going to talk some sleepers today. We're going to focus on some guys that are going round 20 or later. A couple of guys are pretty much going undrafted or very close to undrafted, I know. So very kind of deep sleepers, guys that we're feeling pretty confident about. And we're drafting a ton of at the end of the draft just because they're falling down there so often. It's hard. It's really, for at least for me, I don't know about you, but like I get down there and like, I don't like taking the same guys over and over in every draft, but like they just stare me in the face and I'm like, I can't pass this up anymore at this point.
Absolutely. It's a my guy mentality that, you get down there and you see, well, there's some guys who are probably a little bit more consistent, but hitting on your own guy just feels a little better, I feel like.
It really does. Absolutely. So again, we'll get all into that. But first, I got a couple of announcements I need to get through to you guys. First of all, as I pretty much say every show, make sure you check out the Defending the Natty podcast, which is on the CTN podcast feed. It is Nate Marquise and I's CFF Dynasty spinoff podcast. We release it once a month on the 15th of each month. This past month's episode was supplemental players. Again, the month before we did freshmen. This month, we did supplemental players. Next month, we're going to put them all together for a CFF Dynasty mock supplemental draft. It'll be a ton of fun. Make sure you check out that episode as well. But this episode is awesome. I think we went through, at least 30, 40 players, probably even more than that in this episode. So a lot of rapid fire stuff. And speaking of CFF Dynasty, this is the exciting announcement that I will be putting out there. Not a lot of people, again, I've mentioned on the show, but officially, I am putting out my CFF Dynasty startup rankings on the Campus of Canton website. They will be available only to the NIL tier members of the website, which is the highest kind of base tier that we have. It's $7.99 per month, $79.99 per year. Again, obviously, it is a very unique, one-of-a-kind piece of content. I don't think anybody else has ever put out CFF Dynasty startup rankings. So make sure you go check that out. By the time you're listening to it, it'll be up on the Campus Academy website. If you're an NIL member, you will have known this probably for about a day. I'd need to message the NIL group and let them know that this is happening. But even still, go check that out. If you're interested, would love to have you guys check that out. And then last but not least, Campus of Canton is having a little bit of competition between all of the different podcasts, especially the off-season podcasts right now, where we are trying to see how many reviews we can get onto the C2C Apple podcast feed. So you go to the Apple podcast feed for C2C, and you can leave a written review down below. We're trying to get as many of those as possible. And Felix, our fearless leader and boss, has offered us to each of the shows, whichever show gets the most amount of reviews added to the podcast feed wins $150. And I promise you guys that $150, if it goes to CTN, will go directly back into the show and making it better, kind of buying some tools that help us kind of make some things better, both in terms of graphics, but also in terms of kind of getting the word out there about CFF moving forward. So that'll be a ton of fun. But you guys might be asking, what is it in for you? One, well, I hope you just enjoy the show enough to where you guys will want to go on there and leave a written review and just mention Chasing the Natty as the reason why you're leaving a review. But also, two, we are offering to one random person who leaves a review on the C2C podcast feed a free Chasing the Natty t-shirt. I'm kind of holding it up. I hope I have this lined up correctly if you're watching this on YouTube. All right, perfect. So again, we sell these on the website, but if you want one for free or you want a chance at one for free, the best way to do that, go on to the C2C podcast feed and go ahead and leave a review and make sure you mention Chasing the Natty in that review. We'll enter you in for a drawing to win the t-shirt. So with all that being said, that's enough of spiels and announcements and stuff like that. Ethan, I don't know about you, but I'm ready to go ahead and get started talking about some of these sleepers today.
For sure.
All right, let's go ahead and hop on over then. So I think we have, what is it, two quarterbacks, three running backs, three wide receivers, and two tight ends on our list today. So we'll just kind of go in that order. For the most part, we'll be going back and forth between Ethan and I sleepers. So I guess I'll go ahead and throw my first one out here. My quarterback that I'm throwing out is Mr. AJ Duffy, the quarterback out of San Diego State, formerly of Florida State, former four-star quarterback in his respective class. Didn't really do much with the Seminoles, obviously, but he now has an incredible opportunity here at San Diego State. You might be thinking, oh, San Diego State, they haven't really done much with their quarterbacks recently. I don't really think of them as the CFF system. Well, if you haven't been listening to the show and maybe you haven't been paying attention to the Aztecs, they hired Sean Lewis as their new, not offensive coordinator, their head coach. And if you know anything about Sean Lewis' systems, he has been an absolute kingmaker for CFF quarterbacks. And I was a little hesitant with AJ at first. Again, the reviews with him weren't exactly the most glowing coming out of some of the beat reporters and everything like that. And I was a little worried that, again, maybe they go out and grab another quarterback from the portal to bring in for him or to bring in to compete with AJ Duffer. Well, that never really happened. And because of that, I really just don't know who else is there to really challenge AJ Duffy as the starting quarterback here. According to C2C Winning Edge's team profiles, the second place quarterback here is Javon's Tupo Uata Johnson. I thought I had that nailed down and absolutely did not trip myself up completely. Regardless, all I know that as is who? I have no clue who that is. I don't know, Ethan, if you know who that is. No. Regardless, that just kind of shows to me that as much as they were trying to play up in the beginning, like, oh, we're not going to hand AJ the job, it seems like this is going to be AJ's job moving forward. And Duffy has the skill set that Lewis is looking for here, right? I was a little concerned maybe if I went back and looked at Duffy's history would show a pocket passer But that's not at all. Again, going back to his high school days, he had himself quite the productive seasons. In his freshman year, he ran for 300 yards and 4 touchdowns. In his sophomore year, 500 yards on the ground and 4 touchdowns. So again, he can run, and that's something that, you know, Sean Lewis will want to exploit with him. And the other thing really is the schedule, right? San Diego State's schedule is just an absolute joke for the most part, at least when it comes to an offense like Sean Lewis's. This might be one of those scenarios where I'm sitting here thinking like, oh, maybe they need an extra year to get going. If Sean Lewis can get his offense going in the Pac-12 in year one with the, shall we say, the patchwork set of system that they had going over there at Colorado, he should get it going here at San Diego State with some of the players that they've been able to bring in addition to Duffy. And look at the schedule, right? They start off with Texas A&M Commerce, not Texas A&M. They then get Oregon State and Cal, which might be the two hardest games on their schedule at that point, which really kind of tells you what they have left at that point. They get Central Michigan, Hawaii, Wyoming, Washington State, Boise State, New Mexico, UNLV, Utah State, Air Force. I don't really see, if this system really is going in year one, I don't see a team there that I would be absolutely scared to start Duffy in. I don't know about you, Ethan. What are your thoughts on AJ Duffy? He's currently going as QB 61, middle of the 25th round.
Yeah.
That's like QB 5-6 off the board for a lot of people. Like, I don't know. I feel like with Sean Lewis's quarterback should not be going this late. And that's exactly what Duffy is.
Yeah, I mean, you take the names off of it and you just look at it as Sean Lewis's quarterback. And I fully agree that there's definitely a discrepancy between his potential value and where he's going right now. I do have a little pushback on that schedule. I mean, I know, you know, it's a Mountain West schedule. Cal and Oregon State, obviously, you know, those are tougher games. Wyoming, they have to go to Laramie, and that's always just weird for teams. There's some Laramie voodoo that they've got going on that when teams have to go to Wyoming, I feel like games slow down and weird stuff happens with those games. So I don't love the Wyoming game. You know, Washington State, probably not going to be anything formidable on defense, but it's still a team from a higher level as of last year, at least. Boise State's decent. Utah State, probably not anything to fear on defense. The Air Force game definitely does give me a little bit of pause too, just with the way that they like to slow things down and run it. But in general, I mean, when you're looking at, like you said, if Sean Lewis's offense cooks the way that Sean Lewis's offense typically does, I really don't have any doubt that Duffy is adequate enough to do that. You have a little bit of trepidation with the fact that he didn't really do anything yet on the college level. So I think, you know, that's the main reason his ADP is so depressed, is just because people haven't seen it yet. And then with the fact that Jordan Travis went down last year and he still didn't put anything together really in those last few games, does kind of give you some pause. But my big question just for this offense in general really comes more with one, first year with a new system. We've seen slam dunk coordinators go and it takes them a year to actually get things going and off the ground. Granted, Sean Lewis was able to do it last year with Colorado for that first half of the year. But the offensive line also is losing, basically the left side of their offensive line is completely gone. And so that's going to be the blind side for Duffy. They do bring in a transfer tackle who played right tackle. So I feel like maybe their plan is to shift him over. He's the most experienced piece that they have coming in. It looks like he is Nate Williams. I'm not sure where he transferred in from. I'm just kind of cheating off the CFB Winning Edge sheet that we've got pulled up here. So it's interesting. You know, I feel like the offensive line is the thing that usually can hinder a pass-first offense when an offense is moving from such a run-heavy scheme to a pass-heavy scheme. Look at Colorado State when they went from Adazio to Jay Norvell. They went from that run-heavy team where the offensive line was really about ground and pound, switching over to an offense that was much more air raid, and just the total disaster that it was in year one of implementation. So going from that run heavy to a pass heavy offense does concern me a little bit. But you know, I feel like San Diego State did throw the ball a bit more in the last 2 years under Brady Hoke than they did, you know, traditionally. So maybe they're cheating back towards a balanced attack a little bit more, so it's not as big of a difference. But there are some healthy concerns for me. I've yet to really get much of Duffy in any of my best balls that I've done. And it's not necessarily because I doubt that system or doubt Duffy himself. They're just guys that I like. Quarterback is such a deep well this year that there are some other guys that I think offer a little bit safer floor, albeit maybe a little bit of a decreased ceiling as well. Because if Sean Lewis's system hits, Duffy's absolutely going to explode.
Let me
But
ask
usually when
you.
I'm grabbing late in the draft, I want somebody who's got at least a little bit of a floor. I could see the wheels absolutely falling off if this doesn't work for Duffy. But like you said, there's not much behind him. So what are the chances they actually pull him if he does struggle?
Let me ask you, Ethan. I got a couple of names here that are going ahead of AJ Duffy
Okay.
in drafts right now, and I'll ask you who you would rather have.
Cool.
QB56, Anthony Calandrea, Virginia. Would you rather have him or AJ Duffy?
Honestly, probably Calandria. I'm a sucker for
Really?
Calandria. Yeah.
What about Braden Fowler Nicolosi, QB53?
I'd rather have Duffy.
What about Daquan Finn, QB50 at Baylor?
Probably Duffy.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's about as well, high as I'm willing to go right now.
Yeah.
Or Drew. Oh, actually, no, this is not fair. That's not
Drew
fair. Your
Alar?
pet. Yeah, I was saying Drew Aller or AJ Duffy.
Man, we're going down with that Alar ship. I don't care.
As soon as I started saying the name, I'm like, wait a minute, I got a Penn State fan across from here. Also, a little pushback on your offensive line point and everything. I just, again, using our handy dandy C2C Winning Edge 2024 team profiles here. Who do you think has the better offensive line strength rating, Colorado or San Diego State?
Well, you say that now. I assume it's going to be San Diego State,
It
but
is San Diego State,
and
and they're
Colorado's
and
offensive line though has been trash.
it
So
has been
that's
absolutely
yeah.
horrendous, absolutely horrendous. But still, technically
Yeah.
better, and they're playing much weaker competition as well. So,
So you're saying P4 San Diego State.
I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe, man, like they've had some good years. So,
Yeah.
all right, let's go ahead and move on to your sleeper quarterback here, Ethan. And you want to talk to us about Mr. Josh Hoover, quarterback out of TCU. Take it away, man.
Definitely. So, looking at TCU, last season really seemed like, they struggled out of the gate with Chandler Morris at quarterback. Morris goes down against Iowa State. Hoover comes in and really did a solid job stabilizing that team and stabilizing that offense. He maintained that starting job through the remainder of the season. I feel like this offense is going to undergo a little bit of a shift in identity. They lose not only Imani Bailey, but they also lose four of their five offensive line starters this season. So to me, that makes me think that they are really going to lean on the passing game a little bit more. I know that there's some they still have some capable backs in that stable, and I know we'll touch on one of those guys here in a second. But to me, I really feel like Hoover's got the ability to be one of those quarterbacks that even though he doesn't necessarily light it up with his legs, when I come from that DFS background, and so for me, I'm looking for a quarterback who is either electric on the ground or has the ability to throw for 300 plus yards and multiple touchdowns any given week, say 4 or 5 touchdowns. In the final 6 games of the season, and those were the first 6 games that Hoover started in his college career, he failed to throw for 300 plus yards only once. That was against Kansas State. And so the ability to make those high volume games and high yardage games, I really think that that's what it comes down to. A quarterback who's going, around 20 plus, and he's not so super low. He's the highest guy we have that we'll talk about today. He's going usually around 20, around 21. I
I
feel
got
like
his
that kind
ADP
of upside,
at 20 at round 25.
around 25. Okay, cool. And
Or
so
wait, no,
with
never mind. That's a typo. You're right. He is close to the 20 round mark. My apologies.
okay, yeah, no worries. Either way, I mean, anything 20 plus, I've really leaned into going, zero QB through the first 16, 17 rounds of best balls this year. And he's a guy that I am always looking to target in on around, round 20, round 21. We start looking for guys who we're expecting to take a next step forward. You look at AJ Duffy, and I said one of the things that really gives me pause is that we haven't seen him do it at the college level yet. So Hoover hasn't had a full season, but in those six games that he started last year, he really showed that he has the ability not only to come in and stabilize an offense, but if you look at, who's going to take that next step forward, I feel like Hoover's got such a great opportunity being in that Sonny Dykes offense with plenty of weapons. We don't want any of the receivers really, because we know they have so many weapons. We know that they have the opportunity to spread that ball around. So I think that they're really going to lean on Hoover, let him be a point guard, get it out to the weapons that they have in this game. It's also a little bit clouded by the fact of the, I think of TCU quarterback and I think of turning lemons into lemonade with Max Duggan. And the fact that he was able to lead a team and do so well for a fantasy output. I look at Hoover and I see just as high of a ceiling and just as great of an opportunity for him to step in here and really, not only for, redraft, which we love, but if you're looking at Dynasty or something like that, he's got plenty of eligibility that he'll be able to do it, hopefully, for many, many years moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And like to kind of add on to your points of just how well he was doing towards the end of the year. Again, these were his point finishes and 4 point passing touchdown leagues. 36 points, 6 1 week, not great, obviously. 19 the next week, 17. Finishes the season with 32 and 35 as his finishes there. The pace of his last six games would have been good for QB 18 on the year. And if you just took his last four games where he was like really like solidified as your starter, that would have been good for QB 10 on the year. And again, obviously, again, small sample size, things change from, one end of the year to the other and stuff like that. But at the same time, like it's a big enough sample size to me to tell me that, his current ADP of QB 51 there in the 20th round, he's being heavily, heavily undervalued, I would say. And again, and we'll talk about this with some other TCU players as well. Like, TCU is kind of in that golden sweet spot right now where their defense was just absolutely atrocious last year. And a lot of that had to do with just how much they lost after their championship run the year before. And I really does not seem like they did a ton to address a lot of those issues during this offseason. So I fully expect their defense to maybe not be as bad as it was last year, but be bad enough to put them back into a bunch of shootouts, which is perfect, like you said, Ethan. For a quarterback like Hoover, where they're not afraid to let him throw it 45 times a game. Beautiful.
For sure.
All right. We'll go from one TCU player to another here. I guess we'll just go ahead and hop right over to the running back here. I'm going to talk about Cam Cook, currently RB 128 in drafts right now, usually being taken around round 28 point or the eighth pick in the 28th round. I read that wrong completely there for some reason. This is a guy I fully expect to rise over the next couple of months. I don't necessarily think that he will be a guy that stays past round 20 here. Although, usually it takes guys a little bit to kind of catch on. As long as you don't have a guy like Josh Shevy, who the moment he likes a guy, even if everybody else is taking him round 20, he's going to be like, I'm taking him round 11 now. love you, Josh. But Cam Cook, right? This was, I would say, easily one of the bigger stock up guys in my mind coming out of spring camp here. I wasn't really sure which way TCU was going to go with their backfield after losing Amani Bailey from this past year. Obviously, Trey Sanders returns as well, but I knew a lot of our guys at C2C liked Cameron Cook coming into last year. Obviously, I don't think anybody really expected him to overtake a guy like Amani Bailey. But reports out of camp all throughout spring were that Cook looked like the better back out of them. And then the spring game comes along, and lo and behold, Cook is out there with the ones and getting a good majority of the snaps at running back, including getting 43 yards on the first drive of the spring game. So clearly the guy that they're willing to rely on quite a bit, and it's just reiterated over and over again by all of the beat writers coming out of the spring game. Again, you might be thinking, like, well, What about Trey Sanders here? Isn't he going to be a factor as well? Yes, he will be. Obviously, he is returning. But two things. One, Trey Sanders, God bless him, but it's pretty clear that those injuries, those ACL injuries, have made it to where he's not going to be the five-star back that we thought he was going to be coming out of high school. It's sad, but it's true. In addition, Imani Bailey was just fine with Trey Sanders in the backfield last year. Imani Bailey, 223 carries, 1,200 yards, 8 touchdowns, finishes RB30 on the year. Trey Sanders only got about 50 carries. And he didn't really do much with them. He got 50 carries and 176 yards with them. So Cook, if he's healthy, I think is going to be, if even if they throw Sanders out there with like the first snap of the first game or something like that, I feel like Cook will take over sooner rather than later. This is a prime CFF spot the last couple of years. As I mentioned already, Imani Bailey, RB30 last year. Kendre Miller the year before, RB18 on the year. It's definitely something that I'm going to take a lot of shots on here at the end of drafts right now. As long as Cook is in this range, this is, you have a chance at a bell cow back that in a system that, like I said, has produced good CFF running backs the last couple of years. In the last three rounds of your draft, again, I fully expect he'll rise up a little bit given some of the news coming out of the spring camp. People will catch on as the summer goes along. But for now, this is easily, in my opinion, one of the better values in the, well, just in the player pool right now. So, Ethan, your thoughts on Cameron Cook?
Yeah, I won't belabor the point too much. He's definitely going to be a riser. I feel like he's a guy who, you know, if I see him in any C2C leagues or anything like that, chilling out there in the supplemental, I'm definitely prioritizing, you know, in the top six or seven rounds of that supplemental if he's out there. He's just got such potential. We've talked about that scheme and seeing Kendre Miller, Imani Bailey, the success that they've had. We definitely want a piece of that puzzle and that offense. I will say, you know, like I mentioned it as a positive for Hoover, but you know, the offensive line turnover is a little concerning for this year, losing four of their returning starters, gone after last season. It's a positive for Hoover because he's got the ability to extend plays and get out of the pocket. For Cook, you know, is he going to be running into their backs a lot? That's the main question. But you know, to his credit there, I do think he has the ability for more breakaway plays and, you know, do something elusive rather than Trey Sanders, who really relies on those blocks being in place, from the get go. Maybe Cam Cook, a running back who performs a little bit better out of structure. We'll see how that all shakes out, but I definitely love his outlook here. I do think that he's, you know, at worst, even being the 1B behind, Sanders, I would assume he's going to be the more explosive guy and the guy who has the ability to take the big play. So even without the big volume, you know, if he is somebody who's getting, you know, some opportunities with some dump offs and the ability to, you know, take one to the house every now and then, he might be a little bit less efficiency based than Trey Sanders. So I really like Cam Cook this year. I think he is going to jump up quite a bit. It's only a matter of time until, you know, people catch up with the depth chart news.
No, absolutely. And I'll throw some cold water on him a little bit just so I'm a responsible CFF host here. Chris,
no, we don't
Kay,
have time for that, Jared.
I hope you're proud of me here, Chris. But again, the main concern with Cook obviously is two things. One, we haven't seen that much of him. He had 16 carries last year, 58 yards, 3.6 yards per carry. So like, obviously not a great sample size there, but you know, he's a freshman, right? And every report has said that he's taken a huge step this offseason. That's good to hear. Cook could also run into the same problem that Imani Bailey ran into last year, where Imani Bailey ran for 1,200 yards but only got 8 touchdowns. Why? Because Trey Sanders, despite getting only 167 yards, had 6 touchdowns. So like, they were just willing to hand him off whenever they were like 1 to 2 yards from the goal line. He was just a complete vulture on that side of the ball. Fortunately, Sanders is back, so he probably will have a very similar role this year, I'd have to imagine, unless Cook can show that he can be that short yardage back as well. Who knows? I have no clue. Let's move on to your next guy here, Ethan. Let's go talk about Mr. Reuben Owens, running back at Texas A&M, RB94. In ADP, end of the 24th round there. So, Ethan, how do you feel about Owens?
Yeah, so he was the guy who I jumped into the show sheet. He was already written for me by Jared. So There's no
I knew you're
secret
going to want to talk about him.
there's no secret in the CTC Slack that I am probably the biggest on Owens this year out of everybody there. Somebody, I forget who, it might have been Kay, jumped in and was talking about different, running backs and who he likes this season. And I posed a very hot take question on whether or not Mekhi Hughes is really that much better from a dynasty standpoint than Reuben Owens. And I know I'm high on Owens, and I know that that was a little bit of an irresponsible question to ask as well. But I think the point remains. Okay, so just some things that are swirling this offseason with Texas A&M. Obviously, Colin Klein comes in from Kansas State as offensive coordinator. So over his 2 seasons, his neutral game script passer rate was 41.2%. So still, more run heavy than pass heavy for sure. While at Kansas State, we know, DJ Giddens and Deuce Vaughn were fantasy
Monsters.
gold with that system and being able to run. Last season, Texas A&M ran 453 times. Kansas State ran 524 times. So, there's about 75 carries difference there that could be transitioned over for Texas A&M to improve or increase rather if they are going to be as run heavy as Kansas State was. I don't know if they'll be as run heavy, but I do think they'll be more run heavy than they were last season. I could easily see very close to 500 rushing attempts for this Texas A&M backfield. I do think that, Wigman is going to have his fair share. But I know that they've seen the rushing or they've seen the injury history with him that they may want to bubble wrap him a little bit. They have so many backs for a reason. They want to be able to run the ball without needing to sacrifice Wigman's health to do so. They do have a good backup quarterback in Jalen Henderson, who does have the ability to run as well. So there's, I think we could see some interesting quarterback packages this year from A&M. But all of that to say, let's jump into actually who Reuben Owens is, his profile. So Dale Campbell, he puts out his Texas high school football lists and is very well known around the state of Texas for being tuned in to high school and college football. He had a most intriguing players of the 2024 season for Texas football. And for the Aggies, he 100% locked in Reuben Owens as that guy. The buzz that he's hearing and the buzz that's coming out of College Station is that the Aggies have, really invested in this talent of Reuben Owens. He's a five-star talent. He was the number three running back in the nation in as far as freshman backs last year, coming into college, and he's got the ability to take that next step as a five-star athlete and really turn it on. He needs to be able to show that he can do it in the SEC. I think that's the big opportunity for him here is that we see a five-star running back go from high school and jump into the SEC, and he doesn't immediately tear the walls down and go crazy. It's understandable. Like I get that there's, some people who we've talked about how we want to see it before we actually buy in. But Reuben Owens to me seems like the talent has already been there, and adjusting to the speed of the SEC, he's doing that. I was listening to a podcast, the Locked On Aggies podcast. Their host, Andrew Stefaniak, says without a doubt he thinks running back one, Reuben Owens, this season. He has the clear-cut three-down skill set. And again, just adjusting to the SEC and knowing that he's got to take 4 or 5 yard runs instead of trying to bounce it outside and make the big play every time is going to be huge for him. And just really seems that he's clicked well with the new staff. But either way you slice it, whether you think that Owens is going to be a committee back, and there are, numerous guys there. I know you're going to touch on the competition that he's got. I think that he's just got too high of a ceiling to be going in round 23, 24, of CFF drafts. He has the ability to make that massive jump. I think he should be going about 8 rounds higher at least. And I think that we're going to be looking back on guys. I just see such a clear path for him to be one of those guys we look back on at the end of the year and say, why didn't we trust this five-star talent in Colin Klein's offense? Like, to me, it's as clear-cut as AJ Duffy is in Sean Lewis's system for you. Like, it just seems like such a slam dunk smash spot. But yeah, let me hit me with what you got. I know that you're a little bit more cautious on Owens's stock this season.
I'm a little bit more cautious, but I fully agree with you. This is way too late for him. I got him as RB57 in my rankings, right? I mean, the talent's hard to deny. Like, he looks good when he is on the field. Now, last year, this is a little bit concerning, obviously, where he was in almost a straight three-way split between Amari Daniels, Le'Veon Moss, and himself, and he performed pretty easily the worst out of the three, right? He had 101 carries for 3.8 yards per carry. Meanwhile, Moss had 5.1. Amari Daniels had 5.1. And so that was definitely concerning. But again, like I kind of mentioned with Cook, right, where, you know, efficiency can improve, especially after that first year as a freshman, right? The fact that he was in a three-way tie for carries with those other two guys should tell you that the staff really wanted to see if they could try to get him going last year. But it doesn't change the fact that we do have Amari Daniels and Le'Veon Moss both back, especially Le'Veon Moss seems to be really kind of the main competition here now. Daniels has kind of disappeared, kind of weirdly. I don't know. I can't remember if he's injured or not. But then, in addition, they also bring in EJ Smith from Stanford. Some people are more concerned about that. I personally don't think he's just as good of a back as we thought he was going to be. He'll be pretty easily, I think, a third or fourth back if this is a committee approach here. So, yeah, I mean, I have my reservations. Like, Ethan, where do you have Owens ranked in your rankings? Because I have him RB57, and that technically, if I go just by ADP, RB57 and ADP is Marquez Cooper in the 14th round. And I think 14th round might be a little early for me, but, like, you know, you get into the later teens and everything like that. I mean, running back dries up so dang quick. At that point, like, maybe if I might go for some of the safer guys, I think that kind of fall a little bit later. But I mean, already you get down to the 16th round, you're looking at like Lee Beebe, Kwali Conley, Braylon McReynolds. Like, these are all guys I like, but they're upside picks. So exactly where Reuben Owens fits in my mind.
Yeah, I've got him roughly now. I haven't updated my rankings in a few weeks, but I have him running back 46.
Okay. So if we go by ADP, that means you kind of put him in the 10th round range. Would you take him in the 10th round?
It's a little rich, mainly because I don't need to take him in the 10th round most of the time.
No, fair.
But I sort my queue based on my ranks, and he's staring me in the face for at least two or three rounds around that time. So I feel like usually 12th, 13th round, I'm ready to pull the trigger on him.
I agree. And again, just kind of wrap up Owens and everything. Again, like, I do like him. I'm kind of closer to you probably than some other people who might be a bit more concerned. Because again, like, he has the skill set to be a full three down back. We've seen what Colin Klein was able to do with DJ Giddens and Deuce Vaughn. Like, imagine now what he can do with a guy like Owens, who is a former five-star athlete here. Now, granted, again, it is the SEC. There's a pretty decent jump in competition there. Maybe Colin Klein has a bit different of an approach moving forward. Who knows? But I agree with you. He's going too late right now.
I will say, too, I did read, and, you know, take this for what you will, coach speak or whatever, but I did read that Elko was familiar and had a relationship with Owens a little bit already coming in with his familiarity from recruiting Owens at
for sure.
Duke. So, you know, who's to say that this running or this staff isn't going to fall in love with somebody? I just think Owens just has that breakaway potential more so than any of the other guys. And it just really fits that explosive running back profile that we've seen from Klein's offenses in the past few years.
Yep. Just got to see it now, because his longest run last year was 28 yards versus the other two had longer runs. So we'll see. All right, Ethan, we're going to keep it with you because we're going to finish up the running backs here. So I'll let you touch on really this next backfield you want to talk about. And this is one that I'm glad you threw this on here because it was something like I kind of was thinking about. Let's talk about Boston College's backfield here, specifically Kai Robichaux and the transfer coming in from Kansas State, Trayshawn Ward, formerly of Florida State as well. They're going RB96 and RB112 respectively, 25th, 29th round respectively there as well. So, Ethan, I guess break down the backfield here. Are you advocating for one, advocating for both? What's going on here?
So that's something I haven't quite worked through yet. So one thing I love about coming on with you, Jared, is that it makes me kind of fact check some of my own things and my own tendencies, some biases that I have coming in. I fully thought Trayshawn Ward would be running back one after spring camp, but I did some due diligence beforehand and checked out what was going on on the message boards, you know, at 247, and just kind of checking in on what the beat writers had to say. And it does seem like Robichaux is clearly running back one as of today. So after spring camp, it sounds like Robichaux is the guy that they have leading the backfield at least. And so with that, you know, I've drafted my fair share of Ward super late, you know, 29th, 30th, last two or three rounds of some of these best balls. And I feel like Trayshawn Ward has the ability to come in and complement Robichaux really well. You know, he's smaller and shifty. And I think that with that backfield, I really just think that they're going to lean on the run. I think we talked about this last time I was on. We were talking about P4 coaching changes, and we talked about Bill O'Brien coming in and just the tendency that he's going to have with wanting to establish the trenches. He's an old school football kind of guy. And I really just think that they're going to lean on the ground game, which is funny because, you know, Boston College, if you look at their roster and just break it down from a returning production standpoint, they have a lot of really good wide receiver talent in that room. That room is kind of more stacked than we would typically think of a Boston College offense.
Oh yeah.
So they have the ability to throw the ball. They have good weapons, but I hear, you know, that they have the structure around them to throw the ball, but they have a coach who's a little bit more old school. And to me, that just screams touchdowns. That screams running backs are going to get the goal line carries. Coaches who have that mindset are much less likely to risk throwing the ball in the red zone because they have that mentality of we hit pay dirt by running the ball. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that, you know, I think that this backfield is going to have a lot of upside. You know, I love Castellanos. He's going to factor in there in some way. But I think whoever that RB1 is, I want to have shots on in my best ball leagues and in my college fantasy team, because I just think that they're going to have way more opportunity than anybody else in that range is going to have. You know, RB96, RB112. I feel like they should be at least, you know, 20, 30 running backs higher on that list. I feel like if we knew RB1 of Boston College today, I feel like we'd be seeing them, you know, RB65 to RB75 coming into things, if not higher, if we didn't have some more security there. So I really like both of them. It will come down to whoever is, you know, leading that pack. And right now it sounds like Robichaux. I would assume in the next month or so of drafting, I'm going to have a lot more Robichaux because I already have some Ward exposure on there. But yeah, I just think that this backfield is a nice spot of untapped potential with that new coaching staff coming in.
You got me thinking when you were talking about like if we just knew who the number one back is here, like how high would they be going? I kind of thought back to when the offseason first started. I had Robichaux ready to be ranked pretty high because I'm like, well, he had a pretty solid run throughout the season, got nicked up and everything, so he would have finished higher than he actually did. Like in terms of raw numbers, he finished RB90, but granted, he only played 9 games. Yeah. So, he was on a pretty good pace, got limited for a couple of games, and then finished with a 13-89-1 stat line in the bowl game. Like, he was not a guy that, like, you threw into your lineup being like, oh, he's going to get me 30, 40 points today. But, like, dadgum, will he get you that 15-20 that you need? If he had played all 12 games, he would have finished in the top 45. And like, you know, coming back for another year, I was like, okay, yeah, bump that up a little bit. Again, he's clearly the guy now and everything, because he wasn't the guy really to start. He kind of had to take a couple games there to really establish himself. And you think about all the other guys that you're losing ahead of him. They're going off to the draft and stuff like that. I'm like, yeah, I could see him getting up into like the top 30, like top 40 running backs pretty easily. But then the offseason happens, right? Coaching change. They bring in Treshawn Ward. And Treshawn Ward's a very interesting one because he's already transferred once. And he seems pretty mad that he didn't go into Kansas State and was not immediately the number one guy there at Kansas State. Back, the guy that they did go with had 200 carries. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, Ward's clearly going to go somewhere where he thinks he can be a lead back. In addition to Ward, they bring in a pretty talented guy that I like, Jordan McDonald. I don't really know how much he'll really factor into the rotation, but the fact they bring in multiple running backs kind of signals to me that they probably don't want to give Robichaud as big of a workload as they did last year. So I actually don't have either of these guys ranked, and it's not because I think they're both going to be garbage or anything. I just don't know what to do with them. And that's why I'm glad you're kind of bringing it up here. Again, RB96, that feels too low for me. Like, my rankings, I think, only go until, like, RB 80. I got 82 RBs ranked and everything. And, like, I'm looking at some of the guys at the end, and I'm thinking about how I think about Kai Robichaud. I'm like, no, I could see myself kind of getting him up, and like you said, into that kind of 65 to 75 range, where a solid discount from last year, but like you said, it's Bill O'Brien. Like, he likes to run the ball. Now, granted, he has had a lot of committees in the past, which is obviously a little bit worrisome, but also, if I remember correctly, they bring a lot of the staff, the offensive staff from the team last year, so I don't think there's going to be that much change. We'll definitely see.
Yeah, before I had, you know, before I knew about Robichaud leading the backfield, I had Treshawn Ward at running back 64. So
okay.
I was definitely higher on him than I should be, I think. But, you know, I feel like that's where BC's running back one should be.
I agree. And again, this is me getting speculative here, throwing on my Andrew Katz trademark tinfoil hat here. If Ward's like, again, if Ward, going back to the whole thing, like if he's going to his third school thinking he's going to start, turns out he doesn't, maybe there's a decent chance he just kind of quiet quits halfway through the season. He's just like, screw it, I'm done. Like, if I can't be the number one guy here, where am I going to be at and everything like that? And that just opens up more opportunities for Robichaud.
So, absolutely. And honestly, that's why I kind of like Robichaud a little bit. Like, knowing that he's there, I kind of like him more than I liked Ward. Just because maybe Ward's trash. Maybe like he's making the round and he can't be a lead back. So if that's the case, you know, wheels up for Robichaud, but we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. I'm bullish on him for sure though.
Absolutely. Again, I agree. A little bit higher than where he's going in drafts right now. I could easily see him kind of working his way up into the round 20 range. Because again, our RBs dry up so much, like after round 15, like some of these guys probably deserve to be a little bit higher. All right, let's talk about some wide receivers, Ethan. We'll start with my guy here. This is another guy that I, quite frankly, think that people have just been kind of overlooking. And I think once people start to remember who this guy is, that he'll jump back up into the round, top 20 rounds pretty easily. And that's Christian McCray, the wide receiver out of Kent State, currently going wide receiver 83 in drafts, middle of the 23rd round on average. And it varies wildly. It is either everybody in the draft forgets about him and he goes undrafted, or you got one guy who remembers who he is and is willing to draft him in the top 15 rounds. Not a lot of in between when it comes to it. I mentioned before during the Kent State spring game when I kind of talked about it on my quick rapid fire show podcast for spring games that it was very noteworthy that McCray is back for Kent State and looks very healthy. And at the time, I really neglected to mention just how crucial that really might be for Kent State. He performed extremely well for them last year. He only played in 9 games and still led the receiving room by over 200 yards and still had the most targets of anyone on the team by the end of the year. His yards per target were much better than everybody else on the team. Like, he's going to be a dude that they are going to rely on quite a bit. His, once they got to Maction, oh my God. Again, we talked about this briefly with Nick Allen last week, where with Maction, the guys that are going to help you in CFF leagues are probably going to be fewer and farther between than in previous years. But man, the ones that are there that their teams have to rely on are going to be absolute gold. Listen to these target numbers. during Maction last year for McCray. 14 targets against Miami of Ohio, 10 targets against Ohio, 12 targets versus Eastern Michigan, 12 targets versus Buffalo, only 6 targets versus Akron, but he only played half a game. So he's on pace for 12 targets that game. He, if he had played the full season, was on pace for 97 targets. And if we only look at his Maction games, he was on average having 12 targets a game. The only receiver in the country last year who outpaced 12 targets per game was LaJonte Wester, who went on to be a top 7 wide receiver for CFF. Now, let me be responsible now. I'm not saying Christian McCray, because of this volume, is going to be a top 7 wide receiver or anything like that. I personally have him ranked. Let me see. I should have written this down. Right here, staring me in the face. I haven't ranked this wide receiver 48. I like him quite a bit because that volume's staring me right in the face. I'm like, well, high volume wide receiver in the MAC, pretty dang good. I'll take the shot on that. And I think he absolutely should be going much higher than wide receiver 83. But there are some drawbacks here, right? You're going to pay the Kent State tax, which is 3 of their first 4 games are borderline unstartable. You go at Pitt to start, then I believe they get an FCS opponent. After that, they go at Tennessee and at Penn State. I'm not starting him in any of those games. And then the other real drawback here is the Kent State quarterback situation. They didn't really address it in the portal. Tommy Ulatowski is returning. He's expected to be the starter after Michael Olaimo leaves. But Ulatowski was sub 50% completion last year, so that's obviously not great. That's not what you want. That's not the kind of quarterback you want throwing your stud CFF wide receivers the ball. And then their other option is Devin Cargan, a guy that feels like he's been there for a million years, but I think he's only played like 2 years. Hopefully much better than really the last time we saw him, when he was starting extensively for Kent State, where started off well, 14 for 25, 213 yards, 2 touchdowns. All right, I'll take that. Followed it up with games of 91 yards and 36% completion. And the game after that went 5 for 18 for 25 yards and a completion percentage of 28%. So those are our two options at quarterback. I'm just praying to God one of them has made a huge step this offseason here for Christian McCray. But a guy with this much value, or this much volume, or potential for volume going this late in drafts, a guy with 100+ target upside, just feels absolutely ridiculous going this late. Ethan, how do you feel about him?
Yeah, let me touch on the quarterback spot first. So yes, Ulatowski was very underwhelming with that completion percentage, but it really seems that he found his footing around November last year. Mm-hmm. So his first start came against Eastern Michigan after he came in midway through the Ohio game and went 2 of 7 for a touchdown. But then his first start was at Eastern Michigan, 12 of 28. Again, not great. 2 touchdowns, 169 yards. Really struggled against Buffalo, 5 of 12 for 27 yards. But come November at Akron, went 15 of 23. That's a 65.2% completion percentage, 229 yards, 3 touchdowns. Bowling Green, 23 of 40. That's 57.5% for 284, a touchdown and an interception. Like, he did kind of build, and granted, Ohio and Buffalo, I feel like, are the staunchest defenses he was going to face last year. And so getting thrown in, you know, for your first not even your first start, he came in cleanup duty against Ohio and then came his second career start against Buffalo. I'm willing to cut him some slack. I think we will see improvement second year of that system. I think that this is an offense that outperformed, even as bad as they were last year, they did better offensively than I thought they would do, mm-hmm. because of Christian McCray and the ability to find playmakers in that offense. The other thing that I'll say, he actually was just outpaced by Luke Fleurier in targets by the end of the year, because McCray missed the last 3 games. But I want to kind of reiterate how important those last 3 games are, because he played 5 of those 9 games that he played. Only 5 of them came against the MAC competition, where we expect him to eat. 4 of those games came against Central Florida. He had Central Connecticut State in week 2, but he really didn't do anything there. So That wasn't a huge contributor. And then Fresno State was the other one that we saw him, or I'm sorry, Central Florida, Arkansas, and Fresno State were the big games that he played. Really didn't do much, as we would expect Kent State to struggle in those games. But the fact that he then was able to go on as much of a tear as he did, only having five games against MAC teams, imagine what he's going to do when he has eight, nine games against MAC competition. You know, I think that that's really hard to under or hard to overstate. I think that he's really got the ability to, you know, be that target hog, that volume pig that we want to see moving into MAC competition. He's definitely a guy I want in best ball, but he's also a guy, if I'm doing redraft, I definitely want a guy like that that I know come MAC play. And you know, maybe you're going to sit him for Buffalo, maybe you're going to sit him for Ohio, maybe these tough defensive matchups that come every once in a blue moon against a MAC team, you might sit him for, but you know which games he's going to produce, and you know that he always has the ability to put up, you know, 10 receptions, 105 yards, and multiple touchdowns. Like he's a game breaker in the MAC, and I definitely am on board with drafting him much, much higher than the 23rd round.
Got nothing else to say. I obviously like him, so I think we go ahead and move on to your next wide receiver here, Ethan, that you think is going too late and you think is a value round 20 plus. Xavier Townsend, wide receiver out of UCF, currently wide receiver 129, like very late 29th round. Something tells me, Ethan, that you are the reason why he is being drafted in our ADP to begin
Probably.
with. So I guess I'll preface this one with this, Ethan. So Kobe Hudson's currently being drafted as wide receiver 34. He's the returning leader in targets on UCF by a decent margin, 77 compared to 48 for Townsend here. I guess what I'm asking you, Ethan, is, are you saying by highlighting Townsend here that we have the wrong man at TCU or TCU, excuse me, UCF? Or do you see a path for relevance for both Hudson and Townsend? That's kind of the question I want answered out of this segment, but obviously you got to highlight Townsend just in general. Take it away, man.
Yeah, so to answer your question, no, I don't think we have the wrong guy. But I do think that this is going to be a system that we want multiple guys. Last season, Javon Baker had 91 targets and Kobe Hudson had 81 targets. 91 targets is a whole lot to be replacing. Xavier Townsend was third on the team with 48 targets last year, plays primarily the slot. KJ Jefferson comes in, and I wanted to see what Jefferson tended to target at Arkansas. It's not going to be a one for one. A lot of that comes down to scheme and coaching and things like that. But he was able to prop up Andrew Armstrong, the outside receiver, had 80 targets at Arkansas last year, and then Isaac Tesla had 67 targets from the slot. And so those were the one and two options at Arkansas last year. I don't see a reason why Xavier Townsend isn't going to be a guy who gets 70 targets, I think is a good projection, kind of a safe projection in my head. My hesitation and the reason why I do think that there is some pragmatic concern is his touchdown equity. I'm not sure that he's a guy who's going to translate as a big touchdown option. Last season with UCF, we look at the receiving touchdown breakdown. Kobe Hudson had eight, Javon Baker had seven, and then Xavier Townsend only had three touchdowns last year. And so coming from the slot, it doesn't seem like Malzahn's system is going to necessarily favor the slot guy. But the fact that he's now a de facto wide receiver two on this team, I do think that he has a path to increasing that, maybe, you know, optimistically, maybe five touchdowns, six touchdowns this year for Townsend. I think that he, you know, on top of the fact that he's not the wide receiver that they target in those situations, they also have the plethora of guys who can come in at the goal line with KJ Jefferson, RJ Harvey, maybe Penny Boone. We have our doubts necessarily about what Boone's role is going to be this year. But they have plenty of options as goal line back. So I do think that there's some hesitation to necessarily bump up his touchdown projections, but I can easily see him getting 70 targets and translating that into, 650, 750 yards. His depth of target is another concern. He is primarily, underneath middle of the field guy, but I think that he has the explosive nature in the Big 12. I think that he has a much bigger advantage over Big 10, Big 12 defenses than Tesla had over SEC defenses. And so I think that Townsend has that skill set similar to like an Odell Beckham, to where he can take a slant, a 6 yard, 7 yard slant over the middle, make a guy miss and take it to the house. He's that explosive. And so I'm willing to take a shot on him. I think there are way worse guys to be grabbing in the last round of your best ball. I have him in every single one of my best balls except the Campus to Canton family best ball that we did. I think Colin sniped him on me in the first one that we did there. I learned my lesson in the second one though. So he's a guy who I absolutely want this huge exposure to. Additionally, we talk so much about wide receivers and when they slot into their role. Say Kobe Hudson goes down. I mean, they don't have necessarily, I know they just added, oh gosh, who was it?
Jacoby
The
Jones
what? I'm so,
or
they
Jahvarious
did add
Johnson,
Jacoby Jones. They also added the
Auburn, Jahvarious
flameout from
Johnson.
Alabama. I can't remember his name. Went to Alabama and then went to, I think,
Oh, Jai
A&M.
Hall.
Yeah, Jai Hall or
Oh,
Texas Mountain.
he doesn't count.
Exactly. Yeah,
Let's be real.
he's not a scholarship number. So let's disregard him for CFI
But again,
purposes.
they also did add Jahvarious Johnson from Auburn as well.
That's fair. So that being said, though, I think Townsend comes in with the ability to increase his role just off the bat. And then if there's any other weird injury things that go on, has the ability to really explode, given the, given if Hudson does go down for any reason or miss time. So I really like him. I'm interested in what you think on him. He's, like I said, he's a guy who I want as close to 100% ownership as I can get for the price that he is right
This is one of those guys I think I'm gonna let be your guy, Ethan.
now.
And if he pops off, all credit to you. I don't think there's much here that I can really kind of gravitate towards. Again, he fits perfectly the kind of gadgetier player, handoffs, like you said, a lot of underneath stuff, screens, stuff like that, that Malzahn loves to work with, kind of throw off defenses and stuff like that. But those guys never ever really turn into much more than that with Gus Malzahn for the most part. And I'm looking at his production last year, and there's a single 100-yard game, and it was the first week against Kent State. Otherwise, like again, he's got limited touches, right? You're talking about never more than seven target, or never mind, he had eight targets against Oklahoma, and he had a whopping 33 yards out of that. He gets one to two like touches on in the running game per game. Sometimes that breaks off for big plays. He's got a couple of 20, 30-yard gains in here as well. But again, never really goes for touchdowns, like you mentioned. So that again, that's obviously the concern. I do think you're downplaying some of the other guys that they have at UCF. Like again, Jahvarious Johnson, I'm not sure how he's gonna fit in here. Again, obviously he produced decent, like or not decent, but he produced for sure at Auburn. Again, Jacoby Jones, I'm still trying to figure out where he comes in. Jerod Baker is a guy that they've talked about, or he's gotten plenty of shout outs and beat writers. And then Berdell Richardson, the true freshman coming in, has been a guy that several people have talked about as potentially, or as him potentially starting this year alongside Hudson and Townsend here. And if he kind of breaks out a little bit, that just kind of reduces Townsend's role even more. And like you said, if poor Hudson goes down with an injury, I don't know if it's Townsend that really benefits after that point, or if it's one of these other outside guys like Richardson or maybe Jacoby Jones or whoever kind of takes over that secondary outside role.
Yeah, that's totally fair. To me, I just see the increase in opportunity that he's been given, from
Oh,
freshman year to
absolutely.
sophomore year. And to me, it's hard not to extrapolate taking that next step with Baker leaving. I think that explosive plays are going to be something that they're, I mean, it's UCF. That's kind of their bread and butter is the guys who go, quiet, 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 and then they take a 94-yard screen or slant to the house. But we'll see. I'm happy to hear that he's not somebody that everybody else is really zeroed in on. And he definitely does have his concerns, but I was always drawn to the Kadarius Toney types, the guys who are going to really be gadget guys, but who coaching staffs make efforts to manufacture touches for. Because I think that, if they do get the ability to be every down players, the ceiling is just wild for them. So that's my conviction there for Townsend.
No, totally understandable. But again, for every Kevin Concepcion who pops off because of that, there's also the Sean Shivers of the world, right?
For sure.
But I totally understand the argument of like vacated production and seeing guys where guys are going to go from there, right? And that's pretty much the centerpiece of the next guy I'm talking about here. Dylan Gaffney, wide receiver out of Colorado State, formerly of SMU. If you see the screen, I just have undrafted across the board. He's not been taken in any drafts so far, except for one I did recently that hasn't been put in our ADP yet. Because I kind of sat there and thought to myself, and I'm like, Colorado State lost a lot in terms of receiving production last year. Somebody's got to come in and make up for that, right? We've seen many times because Jay Norvell doesn't really rotate his top receivers a lot and how much they pass, there is room for more than one receiving option at Colorado State. Now, typically, that ends up being one outside wide receiver and the tight end, as we saw with Dallin Hoker last year. Well, they lose Dallin Hoker to the draft, by the way, who went undrafted. That's a real shame for CFF. Could have used him for one more year. And looking at their tight end room, like, I've seen a couple of people take some shots on some Colorado State tight ends and everything, and I personally think that's a mistake right now because when Norvell like focuses in on the tight end, it's usually because that tight end is just much better than the competition level, and none of the guys really behind Holker obviously seems like any of them really prove that they can be that guy to step up. They lose Justice Ross Simmons, transfers home to Syracuse to likely become a depth piece. They lose Louis Brown IV, transfers out. He joins Sean Lewis there at San Diego State. Between Ross Simmons, Holker, and Brown IV, you vacate 244 targets, 156 receptions, 1,900 receiving yards, almost 2,000 receiving yards, actually, and 14 touchdowns. Now, obviously, Goffney's not going to get all of those, but like, Gaffney already had 40 targets last year. All he needs is a fourth of that vacated production to get to my magic benchmark of 100 targets, right? Like, again, you have 244 targets. You just give him 61 of those. Boom, you're at 100 yards. That's more than enough to get him to where he needs to be. Now, I can already see some people talking about some of the transfers that Colorado State brought in. They bring in Donovan Ali, who's been kind of a journeyman the last couple of years, was at Washington State, then went to Cincinnati, didn't do anything at Cincinnati, so now he's coming back west. But obviously, one, his history hasn't been stellar. He had two catches last year at Cincinnati, so that's obviously a pretty big red flag. He's probably not as good as we thought he was. But also, he has 1 year less in the system than Goffney. I do think Goffney's kind of set to kind of take that big next step here. And the other main thing is that Ali has mostly played out wide the last couple of years. Colorado State desperately needs a target over the middle right now for their offense, with them losing Dallin Hoker and Louis Brown IV, who kind of operated as that kind of mix and match slot, a little bit outside tight end or wide receiver, but he mostly played in the slot. Luckily, that's where Goffney spent 99% of his snaps last year. So he's clearly, like, again, if he kind of makes that next step here, he'll be a guy that spends time in the slot and probably never comes out of it, especially if none of those other tight ends step up. Clearly, we need to clean up his reception percentage. He had 55% catch rate last year, lowest among the top five receiving options for Colorado State. Like I said, definitely needs to clear that up if he wants to be any good here. It doesn't matter if you get 100 targets if you drop more than half of them, so or almost half of them. So again, Goffney, again, pretty much kind of boils down to like so much vacated production here. We know Norvell's system can have more than one option here. I don't like many of the other options here. I'm going to be drafting a lot of Dylan Goffney moving forward, I think. What do you think, Ethan?
Yeah, I won't take too long here. I love Dylan Gaffney. was, a year early, and then I was 2 years early before that, 3 years early before that. He's a guy who I struggle to pull the trigger on now, once bitten, twice shy. The situation for him is great. I really do think that he will be the second option there behind Horton. And then using the same principle we used, or I used for Townsend, say Torrey Horton, who has a history of, staying healthy for the full season, say he goes down, who's to say he doesn't see the explosion that, Ross Simmons saw when he went down, or even, Louis Brown did see during the time that Horton was hobbled a little bit. So yeah, I think it's a great take. He should definitely be taken in these drafts.
Alrighty, let's go ahead and move on to your last guy here, Ethan. We got two tight ends that we're going to throw out here for people that are looking for those late round tight end options that people so desperately want. You're going to talk about Cole Taylor here, the tight end out of West Virginia, formerly of LSU. Currently being drafted tight end 29, middle of the 24th round here, Ethan. What do you like so much about Cole Taylor?
Yeah, really, it's just the system. It's the offense that he's with, the fact that he's connected to Garrett Green. The CFF community, I know Garrett Green's appeal, a lot of it is the fact that he can run the ball and he's got that rushing upside. But when you're talking about a quarterback being a top five CFF asset and none of his receiving options being targeted, I pause and think, there's opportunity there. Cole Taylor transferred in from LSU last year. It was his first action in college football, and he saw a season of 35 receptions on 62 targets, 444 yards, and four touchdowns. He was a junior last year, so he is going to be going into his last year as a senior. Again, there's a hole in who's going to be catching the ball from Garrett Green. Taylor was the wide receiver one for Garrett Green last year. He had 62 targets, which was 18.6% of the team target total, or percentage. So he was the guy who Green relied on the most. I think this could be just a really nice year for him. There are some injury concerns. He missed spring with an injury. I looked and I couldn't find any real details about it. It sounds like they're a little hush-hush in Morgantown, about exactly what that injury is. But everything I saw did say that he is fully expected to be good to go by June or July, which again is a tale as old as time. We've heard that so many times on so many guys that it ends up not being true. But barring health, I went through and looked at the ADP, and there are about 10 tight ends that I would take him over than what are guys that are going ahead of him currently. That's Mark Redmond, Oscar Delp, Deuce Robinson, Arliss Boardingham, Michael Harrison, Jalen Conyers, Rivaldo Fairweather, Mitchell Evans, who is an injury concern and the reason I have him on this list. Jack Velling and Terrence Ferguson are the guys who I would take Cole Taylor pretty easily over. The guys who are elsewise on that
Wait,
list,
say those last
I
couple
start to have
names
a little
again.
pause. Say that again.
Say those last couple names again. After Mitch Evans.
Mitchell Evans, Jack Velling, the Oregon State transfer from Michigan State, and then Terrence Ferguson at Oregon.
Ooh, I don't know about those last two, but
We were going in descending order, so those are the guys who are definitely the spiciest names on that list.
no, I definitely understood this.
Yeah.
That was the one where I'm like, did I hear that right?
Yeah. I really like Taylor. I think that he fits what we want to see as a tight end who is going to be a focal point in an offense, and an offense that we expect to be pretty dang good heading into this year. So I think, we see him take a step forward, get some more volume, and then on top of that, be able to maybe get a little boost with touchdown equity. If we think that this West Virginia team is going to be better offensively, why not? I really like him, and I think that like I said, they're nearly a dozen tight ends right now that are ranked above him that I don't think should be. I think he should be well into, tight end 15, 16, 17 territory.
I can see it, especially as we kind of mentioned both with Dylan Gaffney here just a second ago, and with Townsend and everything. Like, kind of seeing where that vacated production from last year is can also kind of give you an idea of who's going to get bigger roles this year. Devin Carter was the top wide receiver for West Virginia last year. And obviously, again, you know, slot receivers and tight ends don't always play the same role. But again, like, without him there, it kind of opens up some more opportunity over the middle of the field in terms of who Garrett Green's going to trust the most when he's looking over the middle of the field. And, well, Devin Carter played or had 141 snaps, slot snaps last year. And so, and it seems like easily that was probably the most on the team outside of Cole Taylor. So if Garrett Green continues to rely on that middle of the field production right there, Cole Taylor could absolutely see a pretty big jump there. I don't actually know. Do I have Cole Taylor in my rankings? I don't think I actually do, and that is a mistake on my part. I need to get that fixed ASAP. My tight end, I have no clue where he'll end up because my tight end rankings are actually almost entirely projections based. Because again, like outside of like maybe the top six, like it's such a cluster crap afterwards.
For sure.
That like I'll just project it out and like sure, my projections got me John Michael Gillenborg in the top 13. I'll take it.
Yeah.
Sure, I'm down. Terrence Ferguson down to tight end 25. Maybe I will end up having Cole Taylor over Terrence Ferguson, even though I was hesitant there just a second ago. So we'll definitely see. We'll throw my tight end out here real quick, kind of wrap up the show here. I need to talk about Drake Dabney. Ethan, help me here. I grabbed quite a few shares of Dabney in drafts, and I, on one hand, understand because transfer tight ends typically have not worked out in the past, but I feel like if there's going to be one that works, it's gonna be a guy that was a top 10 or top 12 tight end last season, going to a system that just gave us a top 4 CFF tight end. I'm not saying that like Dabney's gonna come in and immediately it's going to be, you know, Jared Wiley 2.0 or anything like that, because Jared Wiley actually had some pretty insane touchdown inequity. Because he had like 8 touchdowns for like 400-500 yards, and that's why I boosted him up to tight end 4 last year. So I don't know if Dabney's going to get that treatment. But like, I don't know, like still dropping him down to tight end 26, even later in some drafts, like late 22nd round, like TCU's receiving situation, as we kind of mentioned, like, I don't want to say it's a joke because they have talented guys there, but like there's no superstar. Like there's a reason why Wiley was as productive as he was last year. Dabney, if you just take his stats at Baylor last year, walks in as the third most productive receiving option from last year, and second if you only count the players from who played for TCU last year. The only player who beats him is Savion Williams. I don't know. This is an intra-conference transfer, so we're not looking at like a major change in competition here or anything like that. I just don't get why Dabney's kind of fallen a little bit here. He was great for CFF last year, going to a system that's great for CFF last year as well. There's not a ton of great receiving options in terms of superstars. I don't know. Because, like, I'm looking at, like, who he's going behind in ADP, and this is kind of really where I'm, like, kind of like with you, Ethan, where, like, I'm, like, getting rubbed the wrong way with, like, who's being taken ahead of him here. Because, yeah, like, I get it. Transfer tight end, fine. Whatever. I get it. They haven't really worked out a ton in the past. So why is Amari Nyblack going ahead of him? Why is Jalen Conyers, Michael Harrison, Jack Vailing, all of these transfer tight ends going ahead of Drake Dabney? I just don't get it. I mean, probably the only one I would get is Jack Vailing. Because, again, he's following his coach, and he was already pretty solid CFF tight end last year. Right. So I can get that a little bit. Dabney's at least going to a new system here. But, like, Nyblack, Conyers, Harrison, all those guys going ahead of Dabney? That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. So, yeah. Ethan, your thoughts on Dabney? What am I missing here, man? Is there a reason to back off Dabney here as a pretty high-end tight end here?
I don't think so. I mean, him at Baylor, he definitely broke out last season, but before that, he had a broken fibula, and so he was there was some concern about if he was going to be healthy early in the year last year. Bounced back from that, and fibula, I mean, that is definitely like a freak accident kind of injury, definitely not soft tissue related, something to really give you pause for. But also, I think we're maybe burying the lead a little bit with Sonny Dykes tight ends. Think about back at SMU with Brent Calcaterra.
Even
Nolan Matthews for a minute, he was like the hot tight end name to
Kylan Granson.
Kylan Granson before Calcaterra. So, Jared Wiley came a little bit out of nowhere last year. He had a decent season in 2022. Granted, they had Quentin Johnston to really funnel everything through and Tay Barber, so they didn't need to rely on a tight end quite as much. But Wiley really quietly blew up last season. And maybe the signs were there and we should have seen it sooner, knowing that this Sonny Dykes offense is one that, we should be looking at their tight ends. So I'm on board with Dabney. There is a little bit of hesitation. I know that I think it was CFF Lists, one of the guys from them has made a statement about tight ends being the guys that you avoid when they're transferring in from somewhere else. But it's a new age. We're getting more data on that. Things shift and slide around. And Dabney, I mean, he's going just up the interstate to from Waco to Fort Worth. So he's really locked into, I think, a really great opportunity this season. So I'm on board with Dabney. I think he's, if you notice, he's a guy who I did not say that I would draft Cole Taylor over. So I'm equally on this great Dabney hype train.
Yeah, I have him as tight end 10. And again, I understand people saying like, oh, maybe that's a little bit too high because I got him ahead of guys like Colson Loveland, Tyler Warren. I can understand. I definitely have him ahead of like RJ Maryland and stuff like that. I get people thinking like maybe that's too high and everything like that. But like, I feel like I'm already applying the discount with the transfer here, right? Like, if I thought that he would just be Jared Wiley, I'd have him as tight end 4 right now. I'd have him in my top 10 or top tier of tight ends right now. So clearly, I feel like I'm discounting him already for the most part. I don't know, man. I guess I don't get people's hesitancy here because, and again, I understand the transfer thing, but like as I mentioned before, if there's going to be one that works, I feel like this is the kind of thing you go for. And also, why would Dabney transfer to his hated rival if he wasn't being kind of guaranteed? Like he was going to
Totally.
get production here, right? Like otherwise, like why take the PR hit like that? I don't know. I feel
Totally.
like there's like they're pretty solid on the fact they're going to be using him pretty well here. So I think that pretty much brings us to the end of this. So yeah, we'll bring it back to the main page here and we'll kind of close things out here, Ethan. I want to thank you for coming on, man. You have been absolutely phenomenal here. What are you working on, man? And what can people kind of expect from you moving forward? I guess we're getting closer and closer to the regular season. I guess if you want to go ahead and start teasing like what the DFS content might look like as we get closer there. I don't know, whatever you want to talk about, man. You could
Yeah,
talk about
absolutely.
rainbows and
So,
punnies. Rainbows and bunnies for all I care.
yeah, I mean, right now, with the CFF guide, that's going to be primarily the focus moving, late May into the month of June and all throughout June. Going to be grinding away some team profiles, player profiles to make sure that that's up to snuff and that it's an even better product than it was last year. I think that that's my favorite time of the year for content, honestly, is cranking those out. A lot of fun to really dive in and take a look at some players and teams that may not necessarily be my guys or my teams or my spots that I'm looking at, but really get a chance to get into the weeds and start digging around in there. So that's always really fun. As far as other things, I do have an article coming out this week that's going to focus on pumping the brakes on a few guys that are really rising through this last month of ADP, so April's ADP. Some guys who I think that we should maybe brake check a little bit and say, hey, might not want to jump into that quite so enthusiastically. I tend to consider myself, I think Nicholas Ian Allen had said it previously that he is really here to present the information and play devil's advocate a lot on a lot of these arguments and just voice many thoughts. That's really my bread and butter. I'm not a huge hot take guy. I'm not really going to be the guy who's going to break any insight, but I think I'm very good at seeing the holistic picture and being able to break it down and pose some thoughts that, hey, maybe don't get over your skates too quickly on some spots. So I'm excited about that. And as far Chris Kane and I assume we're going to be back and doing the campus to caching again this season. So that's exciting. We break down our DraftKings slates for you guys. I assume we'll be doing some video content and things like that, as well as some written content. Always trying to provide the best product that we can and helping simplify DFS slates. So I'm excited to do that. You know, summer is always about kind of getting a breather, but that's about to be over. We're going to be hitting the ground running for the next few months right into the season. So very excited about getting back into that.
Oh, absolutely. Again, the month of June is going to be written work after written work for all of us here at the CFF team and everything. So that'll be a ton of fun here. And again, Ethan, it's always a pleasure having you on here. Like you said, you're great at seeing the holistic picture. If you notice on the show all the time, I ask you, like, what am I missing here? Because you will know exactly what I'm missing. Like, what angle I haven't been looking at something at. And you're fantastic at making sure that we all see the correct angles on everything here. So, with all that being said, appreciate all of you guys out there. Again, you guys heard all of the announcements before. Again, I'll reiterate them here, like, real quick. Again, check out Defending the Natty, Episode 5, Supplemental Players. Go check out on campusdecanton.com. If you're part of the NIL tier, you will see my CFF Dynasty Startup rankings there. Again, one of a kind content for you guys out there. So go check that out. And then also, if you're still here listening, make sure you go to the Campus of Canton podcast feed. Leave a review, a written review. Mention Chasing the Natty there. Show us the love there and help us win the competition and help you guys and it'll help you enter a chance to win your own free Chasing the Natty t-shirt. So with all that being said, appreciate you guys for listening. If you have not already, as I just got done telling you to review stuff here, but if you're watching on YouTube just for the show, make sure you leave the like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching this on the YouTube. If you're on the podcast side of things, follow the show, leave those 5-star reviews where you can. Make sure you guys check out the rest of the Campus of Canton Podcast Network for shows ranging on pretty much anything you can think of related to the college fantasy game. We'll see you guys not next week, actually. We are taking a break next week. I'll go ahead and announce that here for Memorial Day weekend. Unfortunately, normally, I'm pretty flexible in trying to record shows ahead of time and stuff like that. Unfortunately, I just cannot make it work this week. So we'll be taking a quick break, and we'll be back in June, and we'll continue with just kind of a good variety of content. I believe actually the next episode we'll be doing will be the summa cum laude expert draft with John Lobb. So you guys will have that to look forward to here in 2 weeks. So until then, really appreciate you guys, and I hope you guys have a wonderful and blessed week. See y'all.